It's Cut by Cut, back with a brand new episode. There's new music to digest and download. We're here with Sawyer. He's Chris on any other day. He's only here to tell you what he has to say about the music, the places and things, the knowledge and the crazy ideas that he brings. And now there's Brooke, the lady with the plan, bringing this podcast some culture and some class. She knows more than she's letting on. Her patience knows no bounds, but she's not showing her hand. That brings us to the host. You know he knows the most. He reads the books, has good looks, and hey ladies, he cooks. The novel sound, he's making an outline, redlining notes just so we can do this show on time. Without him, this wouldn't be as possible, but now you know. I'm Chris by Cut, let's start the show.
That's amazing.
That is unbelievable, my friend.
Who knew?
There's a slight dig in there. It wouldn't be as possible. Isn't that what you say? Wouldn't be as possible?
Yeah, because I need Chris. He is the yin to my yang.
It wouldn't be as possible.
Right, wouldn't...
I'm no rapper.
No. So, Chris...
I was...
The pork to your loin.
I have to say, moments before the show, I get this email which says, I could have researched this week's materials, but I made this instead. Chris, what was going on in your mind when you decided to do this?
I just thought it'd be cool to have a little mix it up with a different intro.
That's awesome.
You know, mix it up with something fresh.
Mixed up it was, man. That was amazing. So I was at work when I got this, okay. And I didn't have a chance to listen to it. And then I got the reminder, and I'm like, wait, Chris never second texts anything.
No, he doesn't.
You know, you could be like, hey, gang, we're all going out next Thursday at 4. See you there. And Chris will be like, okay. And you will not hear from Chris until 3:59 when he goes, running late, be there soon. Yep. So I knew it was important. And then I listened to it, and I thought, this isn't important. This is vital.
Oh, yeah.
This is
oh, nice.
Gold.
Nice.
This is majestic.
Well, I tried to do a little bit. I tried to do a more aggressive beat. Couldn't lock it down.
Yeah. Yeah. So you got a nice little like slide.
So
in
I
there.
Slowed it down.
Like so it. Smooth what, it out. Where did you get yeah. this beat? What happened?
Oh,
how
that's
did you?
Like the Casio. It's not a Casio. It's like yeah. whatever Yamaha we have at the house.
That's amazing.
I found the beat that made sense.
And that you were your own hype man. And
with the kids. Right? Totally. I know.
With the
I was
kids
like,
yelling in the
that?
Background like, was, oh, it gave a real live party feel. It's like party in the USA.
Yeah, I think I let the kids play Halo while I.
Tremendous.
I was like, don't make too much noise.
Yeah. No, you're that was amazing.
All right.
So with yeah. this week, in case you folks out there in Cut by Cut land weren't able to tell, we are taking on hip hop, and well, there's a lot to take on in hip hop,
especially since we don't cover it normally,
and I don't listen to it typically.
Right.
You and know, that's why you brought in Brooke and I.
Yeah, and so we have with
we're
us.
We're your backup plan.
As you can tell from the song, we do have other Chris here.
Hello, I'm here.
And we do have Brooke.
Hey.
And it's Chris and I, as per usual. And we're going to be taking apart a couple of hip-hop songs this week. We are starting with Black Star's Respiration featuring Common. And so I shouldn't ask that as a question. Featuring Common. I'll be sincere about it. Here we go.
Did two whole cars. It was me, Dez, and me, three, right? And on the first car, in small letters, it said, all you see is, and then, you know, big, you know, black silver letters, it said, crime in the city, right? It just took up the whole car. Yeah, it was a whole car and shit. Then it was a, you know.
Escúchela, la ciudad respirando. Escúchela, la ciudad respirando. Escúchela, la ciudad respirando. Escúchela.
The The new moon rode high in the crown of the metropolis, shining like who on top of this? People was tussling, arguing and bustling. Gangsters of Gotham, hardcore hustling. I'm wrestling with words and ideas. My ears prick, seeking what will transmit. The scribes can apply to transcript. Yo, this ain't no time where the usual is suitable. Tonight alive, let's describe the inscrutable, the indisputable. We New York, the narcotics, draped in metal and fiber optics. We're mercenaries is paid to trade hot stock tips for profits. Thirsty criminals dick pockets, hard knuckles on the second hands of working class watches. Skyscrapers is colossus, the cost of living is preposterous. Stay alive, you pay or die, no options. No Batman and Robin, can't tell between the cops and the robbers. They both partners, they all heartless.
Now, I know this wasn't my choice. Whose choice was this?
This was Other Chris.
This was Other Chris's choice. I'm like looking between the Chris's.
That's why I said Other Chris. It was me.
So, talk about why you want to start off with, you know, why you selected it and what, you know, what the song means to you and so forth.
Sure. So, I guess you guys are talking about in this season how whether pop music has changed or can change the world, and I would say that over the last 40 years, hip-hop has done that. It's come started as a small underground thing in New York City, basically DJs at parties, and it exploded from there. And to me, what I like about this song and hip-hop in general is that I was a suburban white kid who grew up, maybe I guess even suburban is like stretching it. I was a rural white kid, and the first time I heard hip-hop was Boogie Down Productions by All Means Necessary, in my car delivering newspapers. And that kind of turned me on to this whole idea of the city and people living in the city and how their life was so much different. And I think one of the things that hip hop can do and does is it shows that perspective to people who don't live in the city. And so I chose this song, Respiration, number one, because I think it's the greatest hip hop song ever written. But number two, it's the entire thing is about New York City and Chicago.
I want to just kind of add to that, which is not only does it provide a window into the city, and not only does it provide a window into urban life, but as far as coming from the city itself, it speaks for the city. And this song in particular, Respiration, is all about the city as a living creature. So, you know, it starts off with a quote from Style Wars, which was a pretty famous graffiti documentary.
Yeah, hip-hop documentary.
Right, and all you can see is crime in the city. And then it goes into Escuela la Ciudad Respirando, which is Listen, the City Breathes in Espanol. And, you know, obviously then the lyrics kick in with, like, breathe in, inhale vapors from bright stars that shine. Breathe out, weed smoke, retrace the skyline. And I love that reality of the city. To me, New York was always, obviously a place to visit. I didn't live there. And as a place to visit, it was always very alien to me. In that block by block, it seemed to have change and have a different personality and a different lifeblood.
Until I was about 33, I was terrified of New York City. It was just this huge place where around any corner you could get killed or you could get lost or you'd just end up in like a junkie den, you know, like it's crazy.
That was your perception?
That was my perception, okay. Yes. Yes.
I was like, is that true?
I think it's totally intimidating, especially for a person who's never been in big city, to even like travel and navigate around. That it in itself made me nervous to even go.
But how much of once. New York City do you think is actually that dangerous versus the hype? You know, I mean, there was a statistic that something like in one season of Law and Order, there were more murders on television than there were actually in New York City proper itself for that same year.
Oh, it's certainly the blown up perspective of number one, the media, but they only promote the murders and stuff. And, you know, you think about all the stories about punk rock in the 70s and how kind of dangerous that was and how, you know, the ghettos and the projects in New York City in the 80s where, you know, there was a ton of crime and there was a, it wasn't good. So to be someone who doesn't know where you are, you could literally get down any corner and be lost and not know how to get back. And then you start to not trust people because all you hear is, well, everyone's out there to steal your stuff. You know, they're going to pickpocket you and they're going to rob you. And then you're not going to have your wallet, which so you don't have your ID. And that was like That was me until this morning when I listened to this song for the first time.
I just have one thing to say about this whole thing. The way you started that, you said I was a white kid in a suburban area. It reminded me of Steve Martin in The Jerk.
I was born in a poor black family. I had no sense of rhythm.
I was born a poor black child. Yeah.
I'm so captivated by, you know, the sort of the birth of hip hop. I'm not like ahead. I'm not really, I mean, there's hip hop acts that I like, there's bands that I like and artists that I enjoy and who I've seen on multiple occasions. KRS-One, who I've, you know, one time I actually went to go see him perform, and the other time I actually walked into a bar not knowing that he was performing and stayed for the performance because I was like, KRS-One, I'm not going to get this. Yeah, this is awesome. But I love the – it's the only art form, I think, that truly captures the feel of a city or the feel of what it is to be in a city, in that hip-hop – you know, the early days of hip-hop with borrowing records and sampling and stuff drew on this massive cultural zeitgeist. It drew on this massive cultural legacy and recreated it for a new generation. And it promoted sort of a knowledge of musical history and a knowledge of acts and a knowledge of understanding of where you've come from to make something new. And I don't think that, I mean, I know punk never did that because punk was interested in tearing it all down and building back up.
No, I think hip hop also was, you know, if I watched some documentary where they talked about how it evolved out of the disco culture and how disco was all glitter and glam and glitz. And these guys were like, you know, we're throwing a party in the projects. You know, we have two turntables
and a microphone.
eventually.
Where it's at? Yeah, I definitely agree. And also the concept of New York City. So where I went with this is at the end, he talks about the line comes up. The apple is bruised but sweet.
Right.
And I had once heard a story, although it seems to be relatively reputed, that New York was named because a preacher in the early days of New York talked about how New York was a den of evil. It was the new Sodom and Gomorrah. It was the apple that would cause America to rot and fall apart. And so people embraced it as the Big Apple, as this place where this is what destroyed America. This is what destroyed the Garden of Eden and has cast us all out.
Yeah, I can see
that. And I think that in my mind, that was always this kind of ironic take on it. It turns out that it's much less exciting as to really where it comes from. But I've always loved that story of New York because that to me matches New York perfectly. Yeah. Does anybody else have anything more to say on that track?
Yeah.
I know we're you know trying to condense, but this seems like we really condensed. Yeah, no, so
I have another. So there was an interview with Mos Def and David Bowie, and they're talking about this song. And at some point, David Bowie, sorry about that, says, "I'll tell you a line I love. I'm not sure which of your songs it's in, but it's about ripping a hole until it bled sunshine. So blast the holes in the night till the sky bled sunshine or something." And David Bowie says, "That's a beautiful line. Thank you. Sometimes it's smoke or gunshots or whatever, and before you know it, the night is just gone." And David says, "See, I relate to that in terms of depression because I come from a family with a lot of mental illness. I'm quite bipolar and depressed at times when everything felt like night. Sometimes you just get such a low point that you physically beat at it until it bleeds, as you would say, bleeds until sunshine."
Mm. Yeah. That's from like the opening lyrics, right?
It's from the chorus.
Oh, okay, yeah.
The chorus. Breathe in, inhale vapors, then somewhere in here.
Yeah, breathe out, smoke weed, retrace. Yeah,
blasting holes in the night till she bled sunshine.
Yeah, that chorus is unbelievably powerful. And I think that's the what I love most about Mos Def. What's the name of his first solo album? Is it Black on Both Sides?
Yeah.
Mos Def, like Chuck D, has this absolute honesty to him. He has this very frank way of speaking, and it cuts right to the heart of what he means. Whereas some artists will tweak and manipulate language in a sort of Dr. Seussian way to fit. Def and Mos Def and Chuck D, there's an economy of language. They're using the right words always.
Well, he's a writer. I think I look at Mos Def as a writer. I remember early on when I first knew him and I was loving it. And, you know, hip hop was one of those things where you're supposed to be able to, if you were a rapper, you're supposed to be able to, at the drop of a hat, just be like, all right, here's a rhyme. Yeah. I remember watching him try to freestyle at something and it was not good. Because he's a writer, you know, he's so much on my mind that I can't recline, you know, that's, you know, he can't relax because he's trying to get everything, like out to him. And there's another line in here somewhere about writing. I'm wrestling with words and ideas. My ears is pricked seeking what will transmit. So he's like listening to the world, listening to the city, and what can he pull out of the city and put into this song that'll give people an idea of what it's like to live in New York City.
Yeah, the gangsters of Gotham, right? Isn't that what he...
Right, gangsters of Gotham, and then he has a Batman and Robin line later, which brings it, you know, kind of back to that. Yep. And just...
And that's... we'll be talking about Master Ace in a little bit, but there's this one sort of flat tire rhyme in that particular track that is what frustrates me about hip-hop. That's only a bit. What ultimately frustrates me about hip-hop, and I think it frustrates me about commercial anything, specifically things like Blink 182 and especially NOFX. You have these massive crowds. You have this ability to speak to people in a very frank way, that the real kids are listening to you, right? I mean, you've got to be like a real hip-hop head to listen to Mos Def. You've got to be, you know, like the punk kids who listen to NOFX. Most of them are, you know, in their 30s now or 40s and stuff like that. You have this stage and you choose to write things like She's Nubs, which I keep coming back to as possibly one of the worst songs ever written with the exception of like most of the AC discography.
So would you say that you are the white man in Hammersmith Palais?
Yeah, I expect something more than just Four Tops All Night.
Right.
You know, I want to see and I want to experience people with messages, whether that message is political, whether that message is go out and change the world, whether that message is personal, be the youest you, or personal
as we get to later.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Totally.
I want to see a perspective. I want to see the perspective of the person who wrote the song. I don't need to know that they're the dopest or whatever. I mean, that's good. I don't mind that filling in parts of it, you know, because some of hip hop is the bravado and like they're leading the party. And when they started the hip hop parties, the MC was leading the party. So part of it's like, hey, look at me. There's Billy over there. He's my man, and I am too. You can tell I am a rapper.
Well, there's that great line from Scratch, the documentary Scratch. Have you seen that?
Yeah, 20 years ago.
Where one of the guys is talking about Kool Herc, and he's like, you know, Kool Herc started, started spinning, right? He's the one who started the turntables. Like, and the MC was the guy who would stand up in front of everybody and be like, you know, hey, is everyone having a great time? There's a white Camry out front. You got to move it because the police are going to tow it. You know, like the MC was just to sort of to fill in these spaces and gaps in the song. And at some point in hip hop, who did the Platform, the album, The Platform?
I got nothing.
Oh my God.
I want to say Diggable Planets, but it's not. No. It's but anyway, they have a whole song about, you know, the MC becoming more important than the DJ. How it's all about the DJ. The DJ is the heart and soul. And I think that, and I think, you know, I'll talk to anybody's ears off about this for hours, that the idea of getting rid of sampling or stopping sampling in music, I think killed hip hop. I think because then people started to just go, well, okay, I'll get a drum machine or I'll just get these beats and I'll put them on.
Yeah, part of the creativity was finding things that mesh together out in the wild and pulling it in and finding a reason to connect them, which we'll get to, I think, in Del's song.
We're finding things that had nothing to do with each other, like, and you were talking about Cool
Herc,
and he took like this Mexican beat, like, and mixed it with a whole bunch of other stuff, and people were like, what the heck is this? But they loved it.
Yep. Oh, the incredible bongo band with Apache and turning that into, you know, a whole bunch of stuff. Or the amount of times that people used like the same damn James Brown song.
That's in like everything, right?
I was going to try to avoid my list, but he is the most sampled.
Oh, well, yeah.
For sure.
From that era of music. Well, sorry, no, he's the most sampled in R&B and hip-hop music.
I can totally understand that.
James Brown. Those breakbeats were everything. That's what they wanted, because that's where people dance, so you just keep going.
Yeah, you juggle those like 15, 16 seconds and go back and forth and back and forth. Let's take a look at Dell's If You Must.
Yeah, here's Del the Funky Homo Sapien.
All right.
If you must.
It's important to practice good hygiene, at least if you wanna run with my team. I'm about to get into some shit that I've seen. This fool's breath on me, so that'll melt your ice cream. They say don't say nothing if you can't say nice things. Sitting too close to him, I'm bright like my ice sting. I tried to be subtle, hand him a stick of gum. I was a victim of breath on hum. Running his yap about what set he from. Gotta get some gum, gotta get him some. He turned it down, his teeth was brown. Excruciating boring, it was a new sensation. I had to ask the dope to pass the soap, cause his coat had to stitch across stations. Our bathrooms in the bus station. He had a can of OE and some raisins. Amazing, head to Tobio, he didn't know. Used to the fragrance, just as the days went without bathing. He felt manly and not like a maiden. He had one dread and fungus. Said he worked on people's toilets with plungers. Girl's not the guy you would want to tongue, yeah. So guys, take your cue from this little number. You gotta wash your ass if you must. You gotta wash your hair if you must. You gotta brush your teeth if you must. Or else you'll be funky.
When I first heard this song in my life, I was like, wow, there are people out there who need instruction manuals for this. And then I had a freshman class of boys, and I thought, yeah, no, there is. Yeah.
Well, there it is.
Yeah, even as, well.
That'll come up later.
Nice. Yeah.
As a grown-ass man, I have the bad habit of not brushing my teeth enough. You know, like it just, anyway. So I just thought my public service moment for the podcast was just to impart some hygiene tips.
So folks out there, you gotta wash your ass if you must. You know, like,
you don't have to do it every day,
but just, if you must,
you like, should what? Do it every day.
Yeah, no.
Just do it every day.
It doesn't mean if you must, right? Must is a smell, right?
Oh,
if you must, oh. Like smell like a must.
Oh my god, that's great. Oh.
If you must, if you smell, you better wash your ass. Yeah, okay. That's all
nice.
I'm saying.
I never picked up on that as a pun. That's amazing. Yeah, nice job, Chris.
Thank you.
All right, Google. Good night. Yeah, see ya. Yeah, yeah.
We got to talk about how that sounds like Digital Underground, though. His voice.
Do you think he sounds like?
Think he does.
For sure. Yeah. Definitely.
He's got a little bit
and
of that.
And that din-din-din-din-din makes me just want to yell, go white boy, go white boy, go, like Vanilla Ice, totally.
And now Chris is going.
Yeah. Yeah.
Come back, white boy. Well,
so the reason, so why did I pick Del, the funky Homo Sapien? I've never been that into hip hop.
Yeah.
The closest I came was
Power Trip.
No.
That's not true.
No.
You love Bones.
There are moments of Bone Thugs I like. Here's the problem I have with, like, so, like, just as a white guy, there's a lot of music. Like, you put it on, and then the second, it's like that Office Space moment, that movie Office Space.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I like it, but then if someone of color drives by me, I'm like, oh shit, like
turn it down.
Like, I can't.
So here's a simple solution to that problem. Move into the country where I live,
right,
and you never have to worry about it.
Well, I never identified with it. I can't dance. I don't move that way. Like, there's nothing about it that is something that gets me, like, a lot of it I never really jived with, in like watching a lot of skate videos and stuff. There was one in particular that had hieroglyphics on it, and whatever. I don't remember the song now. I tried to go find it, but I couldn't find it. But my path, this little run I had in the late 90s into 2000 was following that hieroglyphics path where, I had heard a track I liked. I tried to find them. I think my brother had given me a tape, of all the fellas who rap in hieroglyphics. I found myself liking one voice, and after taking a while to figure out which voice it was Del. So then I had found a couple of his, or at least one of his tapes I had for a while. And then he did Deltron 3030, And that was like that stuff blew my mind. I couldn't find a track that I really felt like playing.
Oh, Deltron 3030 is amazing.
Yeah, I really
like concept album. Yeah,
it's,
oh yeah,
it's this space age kind of like it has. It's kind of sci. It was like sci-fi rap.
Yep.
And I really liked that, but I couldn't pick out a track from that to really talk about. So I fell back on, you know, I got a little silly here, but with Dell and his hygiene.
Well, it's funny because you know you mentioned that, and I was talking earlier about how I really love music that like says something, that has a message. And even though this message is really goofy in this track, it's the second track on the album. And I mean, it's kind of like a ballsy second track. You know, it's usually the kind of like filler track, like, okay, you know, I'm filling up too much of a stuff. But what I love about it is if you look at the language and you trace the language, number one, not many hip hop tracks use the word crustaceans.
Nice, yeah, that's
right.
Right.
But I love how his language gets progressively angrier, even though he remains relatively calm. So he's got excruciating, fungus, crustacean, brimstone, lurid, and then bam, we're about halfway through the song, he drops the N-bomb, he moves into shit, he moves into motherfucker, he moves into bitch, and like the song becomes this.
Yeah.
He also describes going deep in your ass.
Mine? Anyway.
And the potential, I mean.
Well, and then the reason for brushing your teeth was so, like, he could tongue the ladies.
Right.
Know?
So is this a whole song just about, did we decide this is a whole song about oral?
Well, it's just in general about if you want to be a guy who...
If you want to get ladies, you got to be clean.
You got to be clean.
Yeah, I'm very concerned suddenly that I've been misunderstanding this song. So, it's a health class subject all of a sudden.
This got a sample from Lottie Dottie from Slick Rick.
Okay.
Yep. Which the lyrics in... There's a big section of lyrics in that song is about Slick Rick getting ready for a party, cleaning himself up.
Oh, okay.
Going to the bathroom to wash up, soap on his face... You know, looking good in the mirror, you know, putting on his, you know, oil of Olay to keep his skin fresh and all that stuff. So it takes that Slick Rick track that was about cleaning yourself up and tells you if you want to be with the ladies like Slick Rick, you gotta clean yourself if you must.
And because this kind of shit happens every day where people don't, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I liked the angriest line, and wash your motherfucking body before your sweatshirt melt. Like, I love the idea of being that.
But what I love most about hip-hop as an entire genre is that you hit these moments where just with a sound bite, you've opened up the song.
Yep.
And for if anybody's curious, and most of the hip-hop kids I know growing up were curious. And they'd be like, where is this clip from? Where is this sample from?
Yeah.
And I actually went to a lecture on DJing out in Cleveland many, 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 many years ago. And the DJ was, you know, pulling out stuff. He was giving history of turntablism and stuff like that. And I was sitting next to a guy I work with who's pretty – he's surprisingly hip. You know, he looks kind of like – square, you know, he acts kind of square, and then something will happen.
Sorry.
That was actually Eric. The story is about me. And the guy was playing these samples, and he's like, he played this like 2 second clip, you know, and da da da, and he went into something else. And my buddy's like, oh my God, that was Willie Nelson. That was off Redheaded Stranger. And the guy's like, does anyone know where that came from? And my buddy, like, whole auditorium full of people, not a single hand. My buddy raises his hand. He's like, the Redheaded Stranger from Willie Nelson. And the guy's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
He's like, and my buddy Brian managed to go through and name like every song that was played in the thing. And they all had this connection of, I mean, I forget what it was, like Badass Walks Into a Bar and Kills Everybody. Or, you know, like one of these like all kind of cowboy songs.
Okay.
Was the connection that tied them all together. And he was talking about just creating beats based on theme, you know, like, okay, this is the attitude I want, so I'm going to use these moments. And I really, that's what made me fall in love with hip hop.
Sure.
You know.
I like about Deltron and his various aliases. He had a bunch of them. I wanted to bring those up, but that's one thing I love about the rap, hip hop, culture, or like the way they have different names and all these different situations.
Yeah,
I love that stuff too. But I liked his vocabulary.
We understand you, Buck.
his vocabulary. Like, I like, well, hieroglyphics in general. They were always kind of when I was in high school, the vocabulary book was called Word Wealth. So that's what I call these. Like, there's these Word Wealth moments where you're like, oh man, like I don't know what that word means, but it's a fantastic. He rhymed it with something ridiculous, and and it's a way to go.
Yeah, yeah, no.
My vocab for the day came from the hip hop album I was listening to. Yeah. But
so does we have anything else to say about Dell here and washing butts outside of Do It?
I'm just reading this here and it says that it was featured in one of Tony Hawk's video games. Yeah. So I'm thinking all of the teenage boys are getting like a lesson right there.
Those Tony Hawk albums were pretty solid. Yeah, those teenage boys though. This song is proof positive that listening to a song doesn't make you go do something. You know, like when people are like, he shot up everybody. He must have been listening to Sabbath. No, because if he was listening to Dell, he would have been washing his ass, and he distinctly smells like ass. So,
Deltron, Del the Funky Homo Sapien, aka Deltron, aka Sir Dizzle, aka Dell, aka Dell the Ghost Rapper, aka Funky Homo Sapien, aka Joe Higashi.
Yeah,
I was like, wait, that's the dude from Spirited Away.
And lastly, he was the I learned this. I did not know it. In the Gorillaz song, Clint Eastwood, he's the guy laughing.
Yeah. He's happy and feeling. Yeah, yeah. He's that whatever track that is.
He has a section of the song that he did. He did two songs with them.
Yeah. Yeah. On the first album.
I never knew that was him, but anyway,
that was my pleasant surprise when I got in, when I first heard Gorillaz. That's actually, I was like, oh, Damon Albarn from Blur. I love Blur. And then I heard Dell and I went, okay, now I'm interested.
Yeah, yeah.
Like now this album has my attention. Speaking of which, they have a new album coming out in a couple weeks.
Oh.
Now or something like that. It's
interesting.
I do not understand Gorillaz, so let's move on.
Okay. I think now we're at Master Ace, story of
me.
Still here. Somehow. Man, it took me 15 years to understand my worth. It was 1988 when Marley planned my birth. Had to get my feet up out of the sand and surf. Never thought that my rap lines would span the earth, but they did. Went to every corner of the globe. It's time to reveal since y'all really want to probe. I went from Brownsville kid, born in Kings County to Queenstown. Sitting in a sauna in the robe. Since then, never took a day off from the pen. Understood hard work would pay off in the end, yeah. For as long as my body is strong, I'ma give it all I got, try to body a song. I'ma give it all I got, try to rip that show. And yo, understand I gotta get that dough. And so, cause I know how to spit that flow. Sold out three nights in a row like tic-tac-toe. In the fast lane, kick back slow. No need to rush. With royalty, bow down at the feet of us. The anticipation is like standing on the corner in the cold and you can see the bus. It's finally here, I rival. Raised in the ghetto singing songs called Survival. We stand united by the beat, man. Tight plan, right hand on the Bible. Yeah. Trying to let you know. Just wanna let you see. Real is all I know. Real is what I be. Time is not for y'all. Now it's not for me. Life is beautiful. This the story of me.
Just trying to make history. Gotta make history.
Ain't no mystery. Yeah, so that's Story of Me by Master Ace. And the first time I heard it was actually, I have the NPR Tiny Desk concert on my Podbean.
Yeah.
So that comes up every week or every other day. And he was on there and I checked it out and I was like, oh my God, like this guy sounds great. Like he was backed up by two trumpets and a keyboard and a little mini drum, like just basics, but like he had a real old school feel to him. And I think that for me, we're talking about stories, right?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the word story is in the name of the song, but he was just talking about all his life in New York, from Brooklyn, Brownsville. The video for this song, just the way it's set up, he's given shout outs left and right to everything that's inspired him and everything he's done in his life. He's got a football jersey on, he coaches football. He's talking about hearing news from the doctor. He found out he has MS. He's just got a lot going on, and he was in the game a long time ago, took him a long time to get here, and now he's like blowing up.
Yeah.
Or he was blowing up before, but he's kind of like an under the radar kind of guy. He's got a lot to say, and I just like the story behind this. It's like a shout out to his whole life and the people that have been around him.
Yeah, he's definitely.
He's just a cool guy. Like, I heard this. Sorry to cut you off.
No.
Like, I was listening to this whole. There was an interview on the NPR Microphone Check, and he's just like a really down to earth guy, like super humble, and just really about hip hop. Not like making money, not doing all this, but just really loving what he does, and bringing forth some big issues.
Well, you can see that in this song, which I think is a complete reflection of him learning he has MS and then reflecting over his entire career and how he's got to do what he needs to do now, because at some point no one will be able to. I mean, it doesn't really have to do with MS. It has to do that with him. But at some point, you got to know your history. You got to make your destiny, or whatever the lyric was that
history.
I lost it. Yeah. Got to make history, can't shake destiny. So you got that whole thing going where he's got a history. You have to make your own history, and then but you also can't stop death from coming.
Yeah.
And I love that bit at the end of the video where the waves come and wash Master Ace away, you know, and it's that kind of like, you know, all we are grains of sand, like, you know, dust in the wind. And this is it, you know, this is your time. You get out there and, you know, you make your noise, you make your sound, and you sing your song, and you do exactly, you know, what you need to do in the time that you have, regardless of who's paying attention and regardless of who's listening. You know, the only problem I had with this song was just this one line, and it's me being cynical. It's me wanting everything, right? Mm. I mean, I think the guy, you know, I think Master Ace is absolutely smooth. Like, I think the song is this amazing flow to it. He finds the rhythm and he just rides it all the way through. But that line, this is preordained. And I'm like, no, this preordained, like, just finish the word. Come on, buddy. But I get it. And this is the problem I have often with hip hop, is that I'm too clinical about the music that I listen to.
You're an English teacher.
Yeah. And I need it to do that extra bit. And I tend to be relatively unforgiving, you know, which is hugely problematic on my side, which is hugely problematic for me, because I miss a lot more.
Well, I think the thing with hip hop is that you don't like, I mean, you're big into the words and that kind of thing, but hip hop is about taking all that a little bit, mixing it up. You know, he means preordained, but he wanted to say preordained. That's the way it's got to fit the flow.
Yeah.
So the words get dropped, cut up, you know, to bring it up back a little bit to Black Star at the end. Common says Chicago for, which is he's changing Chicago into I go for.
Yep.
You know, like, he's mixed, they're playing with words and ideas. Just brought it back again to Black Star.
Yeah.
Sorry. So it's not just about like, I have to have the proper language here to work. I'm trying to make these words work in my flow.
Yeah, no, it's the same reason that Dr. Seuss drives me up a wall. Because, you know, and one of my favorite authors, I mean, I'm well into understanding that one of my favorite authors, Shakespeare, made up words. Like, he'd get to a rhyme and be like, I don't know what to do. Okay, here's a word, you know, and that's the case. And I understand the blatant hypocrisy in it. I don't know. I
this song to me is 100% complete reflection on someone's life. Like, I see this as the end of someone's life. That's to me, it's like, it's crazy to hear all the, can't shake his destiny, just gotta make history, the same place I was born, I got the rough news, like, everything is about coming back to him, and coming back to Brooklyn, and coming back to where he started, and how he got there, and I think it's just a really great song.
Well, he's had a ton of music, and his biggest, according to him, and in that interview, he said, my biggest album was Disposable Axe. He changed labels early on in the game when a lot of people were leaving Cold Chillin', which is the label. And then like Def Jam was the other, the competitor. He went to Delicious Vinyl. And so Disposable Axe for him was like a game changer, and musically for him, where he thought he had his best music. This song, this is my favorite part in this song, because he's talking about his career musically. I just got to read it because I'm gonna turn my head. Sorry. And like a ham sandwich on the softest bun, I refuse to eat it. I will not be defeated. Here to stay, and get a lot completed. So I love that dedication.
Yeah.
Like, and even in the song, he's like, hard worker from the get go.
Well, that's what I had as my question for this song, which was, is the rhyme greater than the sense of language? In other words, is the rhyme greater than the words used? And I think that you're all saying, you know, yes, that the idea of the message is, supersedes everything else. And if you have to tweak a word, change a word, talk about, you know, ham on rye or ham in a bun or, you know, getting ready like mom's spaghetti, you know, or, you know, M&M, you tweak it because the message is so important, and that's what you've got to get through. Yeah. And I think that's what then frustrates me more, is when the message is not, I'm not talking about this song in particular, but when the message sucks and you go, okay, you tweaked all the words to fit a message. Your message is you want to perform fellatio. And I'm looking at you, Cardi B, and you, you know, but like, that's the message. What the hell? What are we doing here? Why did you put this down? This is nothing more than just
party music. Well, isn't this like, I think...
Party music, and I can't abide party music.
That's where hip-hop started, though, was party music. So I get that part of it. I get the talking about fellatio. That shit doesn't bother me.
Well,
but do it well.
Literally grabs your attention. You know what I mean?
The fellatio or talking about
both, it? Please.
I like the way we approach this episode because unlike our country episode, dipping our toes here into waters that we're not like, say, as comfortable in, right? I know I was scared to death of this episode because I don't know how to talk about it. I don't know how to relate to a lot of it. So I like the way we approach this with at least from a positive angle. Like we just went right into, because I think if we would have taken a similar approach, if we would have said, hey, go listen to Hot Jams 92.3, whatever the heck the episode is, I think we would have come back with a very different outlook on hip-hop, right? Because it would have been the same crap lyrics, same problems we have with country. We would have been more this is awful, right? This is all about,
well, we wouldn't have heard any of this,
right? Exactly.
Right. And I think, you know, I mean, and I think, you know, getting, I don't want to spend too much time on country, but We did the country episode a disservice by only featuring country radio. I met some people at a coffee shop and was talking to about our episode and what we had done. And they were like, oh, do you know this artist and this artist and this artist? Yeah, yeah. And I was like, well, no.
That wasn't the point of the episode.
The point of that was me trolling Eric a little with like, let's listen to
a little.
Let's all listen to pop country radio for a week and then come back and tell our story.
Yeah.
But. Well, anyway, I'm glad we didn't do that with this one.
Well, as far as you know, staying positive goes, shall we finish off?
Let's get it.
Dan Lesac and Scroobius Pip with Get Better.
Really reached out and touched kids, and not in a Daily Mail way. Innocence corrupted, but in a way where criticism remained constructive and wasn't too politicized, and children weren't instructed to behave in a way that was unrealistic, or made out the way they lived was somehow sick and twisted, but simply pointed out reasons to get it together. Not shouting get a job, but just saying get better. Better, get better, get better. Get better, get better, get better. Get better, get better, get better. Get better, get better. Get better, get better, get better. Get better, get better, get better. Get better, get better, get better. Get better. You see the young mother capital. I live. Little kids being raised by slightly bigger kids. Society seems unfazed that this is how it is. While I'm constantly amazed that this is how it is. They confuse love at first sight with lust at first sight.
So I went you know, I started with possibly one of my, the guy I love to hate, which is Sage Francis. And Scroobius has worked with Sage in the past. And 2 years ago when Trump was elected, it was a Scroobius song that kind of got me through that election. You know, bad days coming, let them come. You know, the idea of, look, I know bullshit's about to come down. I know that I'm going to be pushed to my limit of my patience, the limit of my tolerance, the limit of my capacity to put up with idiocy. And for me, I was angry and I was furious and I was not sort of prepared to go into the dark gently. And then I heard this song and it...
This particular song?
Yeah. And then it completely derailed me. Because it's not about anger. It's not about, you know, when I think about all the anger, like Rollins threw at stuff in Black Flag days, it's not about that. You can't fight with anger for very long. You've got to just be better yourself. And every day is a struggle to get just a fragment better. Just do today a little bit better than you did yesterday. And you're not going to succeed. It's an impossibility. But if that's your goal, then you can't ever backslide, right? You know, like you're like, okay, well, I want to lose weight, so I'm going to eat. And this isn't in the song, but I'm just saying, like, this is how I internalized it. But if you want to lose weight, you eat better, and you eat better tomorrow, and you eat better the next day, and you eat better the next day. And then you have, you know, 9 slices of pizza and a binge party. Okay, do better than that the next day. You know, yeah,
it's a realistic goal. An expectation for yourself.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And, you know, I when I first heard this, it was after, you know, so much of my life had just gone into a tailspin, that I had done like a big post about, you know, staying positive and staying in this, not giving in. It's so easy, as someone who suffers from depression and as someone who has been, you know, really down and really dark, it's easy to give into that and to wallow in it. And it doesn't work for everybody. And I'm not trying to get up on a podium and be like, well, you know, throw your antidepressants into the street. Like, I believe in those things. Those exist. I believe in therapy. That exists. It's a real thing. But cut yourself some fucking slack. Like, understand that every day is not perfect. Get off the internet for 10 minutes and stop comparing every moment of your life to sort of other people's lives.
Yeah.
Or the lives that they're presenting via social media, which is a lie.
Yeah, precisely.
You know, might be a lie.
You know,
no, it is a lie.
It is.
It's not a lie. It's fabricated truth. So you're just pushing what you want.
It's not the whole picture. You're right, seeing only what they want you to see.
It's an edited story of someone's life. It's like watching a reality TV show. They're only showing you what they want you to see. Either it's good points or it's bad points for sympathy. Or it's, you know.
Yeah.
Well, it's Plato's story. It's Plato's story of the cave, right? That we're all looking at shadows projected on the back of a cave while life is happening outside of that cave. And yeah, you're pointing in my notes right here, Chris, to
Billy Bragg.
Yeah, this great line, the system might fail you, but don't fail yourself.
Yep.
And as a high school teacher, this is what I want to tell kids every single day. You know, everybody's got these issues and everybody's got problems and everyone's fighting totally different wars. And once we start thinking that our war or our problem is more important or more deserving of attention than anybody else's, that's when problems arise, you know?
Sure.
And I think, you know, that's when kids are like, well, they get really cocky. Well, I'm going through some stuff. Yeah, I understand that. But part of going through some stuff means X, Y, and Z. It means, you know, accepting help if it's offered or getting help or, you know, and don't use everything in the world as an excuse for why you can't.
Well, I think that there's also another line in the song where he talks about kids being raised by slightly bigger kids.
Yeah.
And I think at first people automatically assume, oh, teen pregnancy. But I'm looking at it as adults who are behaving like children having kids, not specifically just kids having kids. But you're if your parents aren't behaving like parents, then that's just as big of a problem, I think, personally. Also, just to run, like, you brought Donald Trump up, so I'm going to go super conservative here, and I'm going to piss some people off, but this song is not hip-hop. Thank you.
What would you say the song is?
I don't know how to describe it. Certainly, there's elements of hip hop in there. Like the rhyming, which is just spoken word, which isn't necessarily hip hop. I don't feel like the music comes across as hip hop. The beat doesn't come across as hip hop to me. Like, I see where they like, I love hip hop. This is great. I'm going to do this. And they did it their own way. And it's not, the song is great. I dig the song.
Yeah. No, I'm talking thematically.
I don't think this would be considered hip hop, personally. But I'm a conservative in that way.
Do you consider Scroobius Pip to be a hip hop artist?
This is literally the only thing I know about Scroobius Pip.
Well, he has some other stuff. So, I mean, I think he qualifies as a.
There was some things I saw. He's like a spoken word kind of guy.
It's the way his cadence is definitely more. Yes,
talk, but it's kind of like Sage Francis, which to me at times is very borderline hip hop. You know, his stuff can at times be definitely not hip hop. Whether he says, you know, just because you say you're hip hop or someone else says you are doesn't mean you are. And my opinion is as valid as anyone else's.
Which I get what you're saying though, Sawyer. But I do feel like this song is really important, and I feel like the reason why it was slowed down and it was more like a conversation than it was like a rap, because it needed to be slowed down. There was a lot of important things that were said.
So if there's no rap, it's not hip hop. You're making my point.
No. I do like you said that when we were talking initially about it. I'm like, yeah, I mean, I do think that's hip hop, but the more I think about it, and the more we're talking about it, I wouldn't consider it a hip hop song either. That song, it's like a techno type of beat in the background, and because it's slowed down and it's a conversation.
So I missed the boat, is what you're saying on the topic here.
No,
the first time.
I'm not. I'm only playfully getting defensive.
No, like, but what I would say is that everyone's opinion on what a type of music is their own opinion. You know, what I mean, is X band punk? Is Y band country? Like, well, this band does this, so they're not.
No,
it can't be country.
X is definitely punk. They were the first
country.
Of the LA punk bands.
They're country.
They became a country band, but they started as. But I love even Chris and I have been talking. Real Chris. all season about can songs change the world or can songs change people, and I love that he starts the song to pick on it a little too. Is imagine a song is how he starts. Okay, so not this song, but there could be a song out there.
So imagine someone who is better,
a song that has the ability to do this. And I also love the line.
I set out to do this. I didn't do it, but so imagine it.
Yeah, I love that. It's kind of like if you ever read Scarlet Letter, there's an amazing bit in Scarlet Letter where Priest gets up and Hawthorne talks about how moving the sermon was, and people were like introspective and coming to God and fearful of the devil, and it was hitting all of the key marks that a perfect puritanical sermon should hit. Never, says the sermon. Because clearly the things that you can imagine are far worse or better than what Hawthorne could have ever written.
Sure, yeah.
And I think that that's kind of the give that's taken here, right? But I also love the line, it's all just because life ain't too exciting. Like, why do kids get into trouble?
Because life is boring.
Bored.
They're bored.
Yeah.
And you have to learn to deal with that.
And boredom is something that is equally as important for a parent to have to work around than it is for a child to understand that life isn't exciting, that life isn't a mile a minute kind of routine. You've got to allow that boredom. It's a healthy thing.
Well, it's the natural ebb and flow of life in general, right? You're happy, you're not as happy. You're happy, you're not as happy.
And then this is when you rest. Like, this is when you think. Yeah. This is when you
it also makes
them play.
Yeah.
It makes those peaks higher, right? It makes that memory of whatever it was that was exciting is even more exciting now that you're not as excited.
When Eric first sent this song out, I listened to it, and I had, I think the day before we had, not to get all about, us and kids and stuff, but I had to have a talk with my kids where, like, you have to want to do better tomorrow. Like, getting stuck in the quagmire of, like, poor me, and you're always telling me no and all that kind of stuff. I had a conversation, and I listened to the song, and I sat there, and I was, like, brought almost to tears because I'm like, he's saying it, well, I know he's admitting in his song that there's a better way to say this.
Yeah.
But he was saying it better than, there are things in his song that he expressed that I'm like, oh, crap. Like, this is kind of what I was trying to say in a way.
Yep.
Or conversations that I know are on the horizon,
Yeah, no, that's, I hear that. I I practice. This is going to sound like the most basic thing anybody has ever said. I actually have Get Better written on the top of my yoga mat.
Yeah, that's great.
I got talking to this woman who's a therapist, and she was saying that when she is working with children, they'll often say, "Well, I'm bored." And she's like, "Oh, then you're an expert. You know, like, why don't you do well in English? Well, I'm bored." Oh, so you have an A plus?
Yeah.
And kids are like, no. She's like, well, the only way you could possibly be bored is if you know everything about the subject. What you are is disinterested. You know, use the language properly. You're disinterested in English. You don't care about math. You know, and the kids are like, well, I kind of care. No, you don't. Because if you cared, you'd be applying yourself, and the failures and successes would each have their own particular meanings and import.
Yep.
And you say bored because, like the word, which I despise, good, it becomes this parachute, right? It's what I use when I'm dismissive. You know, I ask a kid a question in class, and I'll say, what's you know, the theme here? Or what's the character? I don't know. And I always tell my students, I don't know screams to me, I don't care. Yeah. I'm not interested in thinking about this because, like the great Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. once said, nothing pains some people more than having to think. And you're admitting to me when you say, I don't know, that thinking is really hard. And gosh, you just can't do it. And kids get really pissed.
Yeah. Yep.
And they're like, well, I don't know. And I said, no.
Especially if you say it like that.
Yeah. Work your way through it. I would rather have you be wrong.
Yeah.
I would rather have you fail brilliantly than give me a dismissive, I don't know. Because there's some part of you that has an inkling.
Yep.
And be honest with me. I don't care about this. I haven't been paying attention. I'd rather have those than I don't know.
Yep.
You must.
it just absolutely, goes right up my craw.
It's. I feel like it's so important. And in my classroom too, and even at home, it's important for children to know that feeling bored is okay. Like, I feel like in society now, we always feel like we have to entertain our children.
Yeah.
We don't.
Well, that's why television is all shouting.
Yeah, and
any television show was about shouting, and then they go to commercials, and
I don't
more
know
shouting.
What you mean!
I mean, we're so used to constantly getting all this input that when there's nothing, we're like, this isn't normal. Yeah. What do the I world. Do with this?
Well, the Cobain, world's a cold, dark place.
Cobain called it. Here I am. Here we are now. Entertain us.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Chris and I all the time, we're like, it's okay to be bored. Like, figure it out. We're not here to entertain you all the time. And even in my classroom, like this child who, none of the children in my classroom sleep anymore, which is fine because they're growing out of it. They're fours and fives.
You sleep at night?
Rest time.
Oh, rest time.
When Brooke is talking.
When I'm talking. At group time.
None of them sleep anymore when I'm talking.
But in the middle of nap time, I'll hear, I'm so bored. And I'm like, great.
Yeah. Because usually there's a parent shoving a tablet of some kind in their face.
Yeah.
And I don't want this to devolve into old people screaming at clouds, but
that cloud is really annoying.
But I think
darn you, Cumulus!
But I think that when we look at the music,
is it an elephant or a sunflower?
You know, I propose this, that the music we love, which is all mostly older music, or produced by older people, are people who grew up understanding that boredom was time to recalibrate, or who understood that, you know, you could kill boredom by sitting down with a pen and paper and just thinking up a million words that rhyme with celebrate, or words that rhyme with, what was the word I had problems with in the in your song, Brooke?
Oh, did you have a lot?
No.
Preordained.
Preordained. You know, like, or, you know, whatever the case may be, the people who would spend hours just plugging away at that now spend 5 minutes plugging away and then get on Google and then do a couple tweets and then throw an Instagram post. And the time and the effort gets spread out so thin. I don't know. I just feel like what we're getting is subpar projects. And I worry about what the next generation of music is going to sound like from kids who are totally captivated by internet.
Well, I mean, not internet specifically, but like in the interview that I was listening to with Master Ace, they were talking about music now and in the future and what does he think about it. And he was just talking about the importance of trying to find a young artist who's going to talk about all this crap about life that's going on. Because right now, everybody's rapping and singing and talking about drugs and weapons and violence. And he's like, and I mean, our kids are listening to this.
Do we think it's just another ebb and flow, though? Like, they have the decadence, like, then it drops back
was,
and it comes...
You know, so when we were kids, though, it was Ice Cube not having to use his AK.
I mean, Eazy-E and all of that. And
or you go back to Robert Johnson with the 3220 Blues, where he's going to get his 3220 and shoot his girl in half. You know, or Johnny Cash, who shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. The violence has always been there, but... But I think I see what you're getting at, Brooke, which is these songs were, you know, when you look at original country songs or original blues songs or original rock and roll songs, these guys were in jail and they were unrepentant, right? I did wrong, now I'm being punished and I will face my punishment. And now there's none of that aspect of it. It's just the glory of the action. I mean, when Chuck D was writing, or NWA even, you know, NWA, as much as I love them, there was a sense of hyperbole. There was a sense of farce about what they were saying. They were taking terrible situations and amping them up because that's what would draw in my mind at least, that would drew in the attention. But if you look at The Message, it's like A Jungle Sometime. That song is stark, man. That song is like, you know, people pissing on the streets, you know, they just don't care, you know, and describing New York in all of its seedy glory. That was CNN at the time. These were things that weren't getting covered on the news. And so to talk about them in this hyperbole or to talk about them in this graphicness brought that stuff, you know, into the public persona, brought that stuff to white college kids who were like, God damn, just like Strange Fruit did with Billie Holiday, you know, brought that song to the North and made the North look south and go, oh, wait, it's still a big, you know, slavery and lynchings are still a big issue. And I think the early goal of hip hop, as far as I know, was to speak from the city, but to illuminate the problems. And now it's somewhere along the lines, illumination has turned to glorification.
I was just going to say that it's like, it's everything about the drugs and the violence. It's all glorified. Yeah.
You know, and maybe I just don't get it. It's not my music and I'm perfectly willing to accept that as a rebuttal. But I also, you know, and I'm saying this at after we've just covered four amazing songs and the litany of artists out there who perform are amazing. But I got into it with a kid last year who called me an SJW feminist in class because I was talking about NWA. And I said, you know, let's take out the violence in the music, right? Social justice warrior, SJW.
You saw me cross my eyes for a second.
So I was like, let's take out the violence. And let's just talk about the words. Let's look at the word count. You know, and bitch and ho were like the number one words being used. Well, who are these words, you know, insulting? They're insulted to men, to feminize them, to make them weak, to make them pussies, right? To use the parlance of the time, and to humiliate them. And when that's the preponderance of language, well, what we're doing is actually more damage than anything else. And I know they're speaking with the words that they, you know, NWA was using the language that they use, but like there was nothing as I feel like I've just talked myself into a deep hole now.
You have, and we're just all watching you try to scratch out.
But I worry.
Here, let me give you a shovel.
Yeah. No, I just, I look at, I as a, somebody who studies language and as somebody who studies the words being utilized, I'm fearful that here's how terrible life is in Compton takes a back seat to, I think you're a bitch, you know, or I think you're a hoe or your girlfriend, you know, you're, whatever the case may be, whatever hyperbolic thing may be. And I feel like the message gets lost.
But is that on the listener or on the performer, the message getting lost?
No, I think it's on the listener, but I also think the performer has, you know, a responsibility to be authentic and real, but also, I don't know. I don't have a specific answer.
There's
for that.
A fine line there,
yeah,
for
definitely.
Sure.
About. I think too, like we look at it, so it's not so much the social justice warrior aspect of it, but to me, you look back at that if that were written now, it wouldn't have been. It's not going to be as much of a pop hit. Like, it's not going to be as successful because we're a little more cognizant of those words now, I think.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, when I was a kid and when I was listening to, I remember going to Sam Goody in Providence to buy Straight Outta Compton, and the guy telling me behind the counter, he wouldn't sell it to me. He's like, this isn't your music.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, what do you mean this isn't my music? And he's like, this isn't for you. And I was like, okay.
He could see into the future and how you'd be upset if someone didn't rhyme Preordained properly.
Right. No, but I fucking love Straight Outta Compton. It's an amazing album. But you're right, Chris, that on hindsight, looking back at the language utilized, I'm like, man, this was unbelievably misogynistic, even at the end of the day. And I think the irony of Straight Outta Compton is that Express Yourself, you know, the song about being able to be free to say what you want to say, is the only song on the album without a swear. Mm. I think it's amazing, yeah. You know.
Looking back on the whole thing now, we talked about this, I don't even know if it was last week, with Ice Cube. It was an act. Right.
Yeah.
It was pushing the parts that he wanted to show out into the crowd, like we would do with social media. We show the good parts or the bad parts.
Yeah.
And that's what he was doing with those songs, and so was everyone else.
Yeah. Right. I hesitated to call it an act because I do think they lived they lived it.
That, yeah, but right? They live it the same way I live my Instagram life. Like when I post a picture of X, you know, then that's the part of life I'm showing you, and that's the part that I'm pushing. So for Ice Cube, yes, and N.W.A., that's the life that they're living for sure. They're
wearing that like a suit of armor at the time. Yeah, like, right? Like this is,
Yeah, performers take on different personas to get different messages across. Right. And I think that's...
Like wash your ass.
Yeah.
If you must.
And I must. And
we're all musting right now because that little crack in the window is not helping.
God, yeah. And we must. So bad. Well, I think now's a good time that we're reaching the hour mark. So it's about time to call it a night.
And this is for the 88%.
I think that we opened up. That wasn't being recorded when you mentioned it.
That's okay.
So I think
it's an inside joke.
I think that at the end of the day, We've reached our time. I think we've opened up more cans of worms than we've actually put worms in cans.
For sure. Yes.
And if you have an issue with us,
the worms need to be free, though.
Call another podcast. but this is episode 37 of Cut by Cut.
I'm pretty sure.
The two hosts have no fucking clue, and yet...
I'm pretty sure, because I think I promoted last week's as 34 and then realized actually that it was 36. Wrong.
Yeah. So we only have two more episodes left of the season before we take our summer hiatus. Check back on Thursday. There will be a bonus episode going out to the late, great Anthony Bourdain. If you want to follow us, you can do so on iTunes, Podbean at cutbycut.com. You can email us at cutbycutpodcast@gmail.com. You can reach us at Instagram at cutbycutpodcast. That's cut.
By cut.
X-cut. Cut X-cut, because a long time ago I thought that looked cool, and now I realize what a huge, colossal mistake I've made.
I think I've made a huge mistake. Shout out to Linder Linder quickly for buying a t-shirt.
Yes, yes. And Alicia, who was posting some beautiful pictures of Newport while she was going on her walk and listening to us.
Nice.
Brooke, you yourself are wearing a fantastic Cut t-shirt. Yeah. That I
she's
believe
also
you,
cut. Did you see that?
Good, I know. She's jacked by jacked.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's more.
I'm Jay.
Sounded really... I apologize for that to all the listeners out there.
Watch out, Jack.
Yeah. Well, with 31 seconds left, does anybody have anything they want to say?
Thanks for coming, Brooke and Chris. Other Chris.
And
real Chris.
Thank you all for inviting me back.
Thank you.
Even though I forced my way in on this one.
No, not at all.
Like a stranger in the night. Yeah. Knock and the door shall be open. Smash through the window and we have to invite you to the podcast. So, all right, we'll see you in a couple days, and then we'll see you in a week, and then have a nice summer.
Yoo-hoo.